Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment, live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville here, solamente. My beautiful wife is out picking up our son, Rev. It's his last full day of school, and I said I'd take over till she got back, because she's so nice to fill in for me when I have to get the newspaper out. We're going to have a great show. We've got a couple great guests. We're brought to you, as always, by American Citizen Press and Julie McCallum and Synergetics. You're losing energy, sexual vitality, lots of other things that come on with getting a couple years in age. Well, give Julie a call. She'll be able to, and her staff can really bring the zest back into life. We've had an interesting day. Apparently, the mime is going out. Fauci is a sociopath. I think Peter Navarro is the one who indicated it first. But I don't think there's any question about it. He's a sociopathic liar. He reminds me something of Clinton. I mean, charming and facile with words and always willing to parse words. But he's a guy who can go out there and say, you know, no masks, they don't do any good. Oh, I was lying about that. Do a lot of good, but I didn't want to make a run on the masks. They wouldn't be available for workers. Oh, the Wuhan lab, no chance that came from the lab. It came from elsewhere. So he's just so good at lying. But he's starting to get caught. Rand Paul was the first one to really take it to him, and now Peter Navarro and others. I think he's had his 15 minutes of fame, and it's time he go away. Navarro predicted that in 90 days he'll be gone. I sure hope so. I really, every time I see him on the TV set, I kind of flinch. Oh my God, what's he lying about today? We've got with us a great columnist, John Conlon. We've had him on before. He wrote a great article. I think it's an American Thinker. John, you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, it's great to have you back on.
Well, thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell people the title of your column and what's it about?
Well, the title is "It Wasn't American Greatness: What Future Are We Leaving for Millions of Americans?" And in my past life, I've done a lot of effort in trying to bring freedom to K through 12 public schools, so I know a little bit about that world.
Right.
And my article was just about, you know, every year about 4 million kids move on from 12th grade in high school. Just a little over 80% of them actually graduate. The rest don't. Of those that graduate, about two-thirds go to college. But of those that go to college, 40% don't graduate in 6 years. So net-net, you have about 2.6 million kids each and every year who either aren't going to go to college or aren't going to go to graduate from college, who need a job, bottom line. And the whole point is, what future are we leaving these American citizens when they have to go out and compete against just a tidal wave of illegal immigrants who will work for far below market wages?
Well, you know, I agree with all of that. The only part that I would add is the future for those 40% that do graduate and then go on to get advanced degrees or their masters and other ones, they're often going into a workplace burdened by hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and there's not much of a place for them either. And with the visas that the Republicans and the Biden administration keep on wanting to give to Indian workers and others, they're facing an equally bleak future.
I agree 100%. It's I don't know. These are American citizens, so I think we should be looking out for them first. As I noted in my piece, I don't blame the people, the illegal immigrants that come here. We've had the welcome mat out for these people for decades. You know, we have sanctuary cities, this lovely state. We give them driver's licenses. They got the $1,400, you know, stimulus check. So from their perspective, you got to look and say, you know, how freaking illegal really is this? If you look at our actions versus our words, you know, we don't want you to come in the front door, but you're certainly to come in here and work for below market wages.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The one I do blame in particular is, of course, I blame the Democrats because all they look at them is future voters, so they can have, we can have a Brazil-like system with a 1% class and everybody else in the slums, more or less. But I must
there's a great meme. There's a great meme out there that says, you know, if all the illegal immigrants were coming across and were going to be voting Republican, we'd have a border wall and it'd be manned with, you know, machine guns and
right.
anything possible to stop them. Right. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%.
But then, the George W. Bushes who purportedly represent, quote-unquote, traditional Republican values, whatever the hell that is, they're the ones that gave Americans no choice, neither the Republicans or the Democrats willing to stand up for the working men and women of the country, the middle class, the people who graduate with huge debt. And it wasn't until Donald Trump came along and said, no, America first, we're going to build a wall, we're going to do trade policies, all of those things which make eminent sense from any country that wants to survive, or at least survive with a standard of living for its people. It's not limited to 1%. And then they always go, well, when are they going to get rid of Trump? We're so tired of Trump. Why can't they go back to good old Liz Cheney, who says that traditional Republican values are military spending? Yes, sirree, Bob. We love that military spending. We've got to have as much as we want. And then we offset that by massive social spending, so we go trillions in debt. The traditional Republican Party, to the extent it's represented by the Liz Cheneys, the Bill Kristols, you can just kind of go down the list of horribles. They represent no choice at all, except our betters in the corporate corrupt media tell us that's who we need to turn to. You know, that's who we need to really get to be part of again.
I agree 100%. Yeah, up until Trump coming along, the average working schmo really, like you said, had no place to turn. Right? And
yeah.
It seems that we're back there again since we have,
yes.
you know, thousands and thousands of people streaming across our southern border
yeah.
every day.
Yeah.
And all those children, we all know that those children are going to end up someplace. They're going to call their families, and it's not going to be one kid. It's going to be, you know, 10 or 15 people. And then you got to tie that with everyone accepts that there is a coming technological revolution that's just going to eliminate a hell of a lot of low-skilled jobs. You know, driving, taxis. People need someplace to go to work. They need to be able to, add value, add some wealth, and earn some money. And, sitting around and hoping that the universal income is going to save you is not going to work.
Well, universal income is I grew up with a lot of kids on trust funds, and they had universal income, a form of universal income, and it's amazing how sad most of their lives were. I mean, a few succeeded and did worthwhile things, but a lot of them had no desire to go out there and do what you have to do to earn a living, and so they found other ways, drink, drugs, other things. So if you think universal income is a panacea, it's really a panacea to hell. It's a purgatory. Human beings need to struggle.
Without a doubt, this was a few years back, but I read, I think it was some amazing number, like 1 in 5 or 1 in 7 households in the UK or in London, nobody works and hasn't for generations.
Right.
And, you know, those people don't learn getting up in the morning and going to work because no one in their entire family does that. And that kind of does impact your, employment possibilities when you've never gone to work, you've never had someone tell you to do something that you don't really want to do, but you do
right.
it anyhow. You know, all those normal things that the rest of us live with. So, it's a very dangerous path, and I think it's, I just wanted to put it, you know, it's graduation time. You have, you know, joyous time,
exactly.
All these kids moving. So let's wrap it and say, okay, let's start taking care of their futures.
Right. Well, you would think that's what everybody'd think, other than, you know, the true hardcore politicians, the true hardcore Marxists. But it's amazing. How many people, I don't understand Democrats anymore. I mean, certainly 30, 40 years ago, you know, I saw good things in the Republican Party and saw bad things in the Republican Party and saw good things in the Democratic Party and I saw bad things in the Democrat. I don't see anything but bad things in the Democratic Party these days. There's nothing I like. I mean, nothing. There's no part of it. I come from a big city in New York City, and I used to love to go to the arts and used to love to go to the movies. So they destroyed all that. I used to go to Knicks games and they destroyed that. It's amazing how the left has an incredible capacity to destroy anything they touch. And if you can destroy California and having people wanting to get out of there, that's pretty good destructive tendencies that you got going.
It is an impressive result. I mean, in a negative way, I agree. California is an amazing place from natural resources, from agriculture, climate, just a place to live. But what is it? Something like, 2/3 of all welfare cases are in California now or something like that. I mean, it is definitely a very sick place.
Now you can take a place like Venice Beach, which I can remember going to as when I was a lot younger. And apparently everybody wants to move out of there as the homeless have taken it over, which appears to be the fate for Denver. So, at least according to our present mayor and governor.
Oh, exactly. And so, like you said, supposedly a lot of these policies and whatnot are, you know, for the poor and the working man, but they always seem to end up decimating the poor and the working man, whether it's, you know, crazed property values from inflation and property taxes that drive normal people out of their houses, you know, the California housing situation. You know, if you're just a normal schmo, you have no place to live.
Right, right. Well, if you look where Democrats have had control to help the poor and the needy, which is the urban areas from Detroit to Cleveland to L.A. now and everywhere else, somehow, as kind of Trump said, what exactly have they done for you? What is it that all their wonderful, humane policies keep you in utter misery? And I think that was getting through a little bit. Trump was actually, and that's what drove him even crazier, that, you know, that it's their black population, their people of color, you know, no conservatives let do that, or then you're an Uncle Tom or whatever else you become if you think for yourself and the communities. But it's very hard to look at the wonderfulness of liberals and what they've created for all the inhabitants of places they rule.
We're on the same page, and, you know, we can only hope that there's an awakening out there, and there seems to be an awakening, but, you know, I'm a firm believer that most of the country's problems and probably all of the solutions start in K-12 public schools. And until we get those fixed, we're in a lot of trouble, and you know, they've been broken for a very long time. A lot of the stupidity you've just discussed has their roots in a poor public education.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of amazing. I went to a prep school that had been around for a couple hundred years, but the buildings really were dilapidated. I mean, they looked pretty from the outside, but the interior, the pipes were all breaking and everything else, and they eventually redid the whole campus. But if you just looked at from the inside, you go, well, you got, how could the kids learn? As a practical matter, the kids learn because their parents cared and the teachers were good and you're expected to do well, so you got a great education. So endlessly building bigger, more ventilated classroom isn't going to do it. You either provide parents and teachers who want to teach you, or all the rest is garbage.
I agree 100%. It really wasn't that long ago that a single woman, most of the time it was a single woman, taught, 20 to 40 kids from, right. Little kids to high schoolers. And somehow she was able to instill knowledge, keep order. You know, it can be done. You just have to want it to be done. And there's
also
a lot of dedicated teachers and stuff that, and administrators out there, but they're overwhelmed by the system. And if you want friends at work and whatnot, you keep your head down.
Yeah, well, it used to be, because there are very few jobs out there for women, that the school teacher was a way to make a living, and it attracted a lot of bright, capable women, and some men, obviously, too. But now, all the surveys I've seen is that the bottom fourth of ones tend to be attracted to a school job. So, you're having the not that all that way, but you're getting the worst of the worst to teach the worst of the worst techniques to the least fortunate.
Right. Well, and see, if we would fund parents and give them control over 100% of the money spent on their kids every year, that'd be, well, nationally, that'd be over $15,000 per kid. Guess what? The marketplace works. It would be amazing in a year or two. We're not talking decades. A year or two, the change would happen.
Yes. Yeah, it would be enormous. And it's amazing. We live here in Westminster, and so we moved up. We had a choice. They have a very good high school you could go to. They had a lottery system, and they also had a charter school that was very good. So we went to parents' night for both, decided would be best for our son. And it was like night and day. It was, notwithstanding the public high school being a good one, we were obviously a burden to them. Kind of like, oh, God, here's some more people who want to have their kid here. Oh, God, what do you want? And blah, 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 blah. And the charter school, which depend upon the students to be able to just survive, they're going, oh, Mr. Bonneville, no, this must be a little rev. It was night and day. It was night and day.
It's that marketplace. They want you, and they will do,
Well, the one good thing that's happened, I think, with the COVID crisis, and there's always silver linings, although not too many, is that the utter depravity of the teacher unions and Randy Weingarten, CEA and the AFT, and their really utter lack of caring about kids and their education came out in spades. The average teachers union did whatever they could to prevent kids from going to school on every kind of basis that they could possibly find. And it's came through. I mean, there are some parents at school board meetings just driving the board members out as fast as they can. But you're absolutely right. If tomorrow they said $15,000 a child, you pick out the school, you go wherever you want to, the education in the United States would increase tenfold, 20. I mean, the test results would skyrocket. Everything would skyrocket. The marketplace of ideas to take your $15,000 and get the best education you can for your kids would make them compete for your child. And of course, we don't do it, which is so sad. I mean, do you ever think, well, is there any country, is there any country in the world that just said, here's the money, deal with it? You can spend it. You can't just buy drugs or bet on the baseball game. But if you want to put it, you can put it to any school you want to. Are there any countries in the world that do that?
Not that I'm aware of. I forget. One of the Nordic countries is fairly close. But no. It's a poorly designed system. The marketplace is just a system. And, if you look at wherever you are, whoever's listening to this, if you look around at every product that you can see, they've all been improved greatly through this process called the marketplace. It drives things better and better. It drives costs lower and lower. You get more of what works and less of what doesn't work. We spoke a month or two ago, and I said, you chortle at it. I said, competition is a bitch, and it really is. I mean, it is tough. It is not easy.
It forces
you to do things
that you don't want to do. I mean, I own a newspaper with COVID and restaurants and it cut down. So I've had to cut people off. I've had to decrease salaries, not because I want to, but I have to survive. So that's those tough decisions you make in a marketplace that if you're protected from the marketplace, well, you know, you'll just go whatever is the easiest for you, not what is really necessary.
And the schools, I just laugh. There was a push a few years back, and I think Denver Public Schools are now jumping on the bandwagon too, of pushing back start times for high schoolers because, you know, they can't get up early and it's biology and this and that. And I'm like, okay, I'm a scientist. Show me the results. Show me. We've had a couple years now here. I'm in Littleton. In Littleton, they did it a couple years back. So show me the test results. They remember they brought technology into the classroom. In Littleton, every kid has a Chromebook. They do everything on computers.
Right.
Okay,
right.
They've been doing that for 5 years. So show me the results. It's real straight. Right. But they don't. They refuse to show you the results. You know,
they do
their best to not have any results that you can say, well, this is what it was last year. This is what it's this year. You know, it's not working. But
well, there's a new bill for the legislature, and any bill brought by the Denver legislature is a, you know, death sentence, but you know, no more legacy grants for university.
The biggest problem facing education.
It's all those people whose parents and grandparents and great parents went there, and since if you're an illegal alien, you only have a 50-50 chance that your great grandparent went there or something. This will be much better, and they're also getting rid of SATs and ACTs. So.
Right.
And you're going to let people in based on what? Social justice norms or whatever else? I mean, if they've spent a lot of time destroying K through 12, they're now darn sure they're going to take undergraduate and make it another worthless experience if it isn't already one.
Oh, exactly. Well, and you know, one of the cruelest things you could do to any young person about the SAT and the ACTs is to have them go someplace that they're not prepared for. You know, if you look at the, quote, elite schools around the country, they have much lower standards for black kids. But the problem is they're competing against somebody that has, like, a perfect SAT score, and they have a 700. There's no way they have the knowledge at that point in time to keep up with those kids in class. So they end up either dropping out or being the lowest performers. You know, I'm certain the universities don't mind the getting rid of the SATs and the ACTs. They'll let in more kids. They'll all need student loans. You know, that just flows directly from the public into a handful of professors and administrators' pockets, and that's the process. And then, like you said, then these kids either drop out or end up with a lousy degree, and now not only did they miss 4 or 5 years of income and developing job skills and whatnot, they're huge in debt and probably will, you know, have a difficult time to ever get out of debt. And of course, because the feds or the politicians write the law, you know, student loans are one of the very few things that you can't get rid of in bankruptcy.
That's
not by accident that's the case.
Right. Well, you have to try, and I mean try, to flunk out of Harvard today. You cannot flunk out. I mean, as long as you attend some classes and at least turn in a piece of paper, you're going to graduate. And being the smart guys they are, you know, cum laude means you finish in the top, maybe top half of your class. Not really. Maybe the top three quarters of your class. And so all these people with you know, magna cum laude, magna cum laude from Harvard. Wow. You might, where were we? I think I was, I think I was the top 40%. You know, they just throw out all the standards have been, you know, done away with. They're not of any relevance anymore, and then you take your classes in worthless subjects.
And you're not doing anyone any favors, because sooner or later, the rubber meets the road. It's like changing, you know, math standards are now racist, you know, that a real answer is, you know, racist and this is racist. It's like you're not doing these kids any good. You know, I look at, imagine during one of the various waves of immigrations here, I'll beat up the Irish because I have Irish in me. What if they would have said a long time ago that, those dang Irish, they're too damn stupid to learn proper English, so we're going to teach them this dumbed-down version of English. Do you think that that might have impacted every single Irish person's future, and they would now be on the lowest economic rungs forever because of that? I mean, it's insane. They're just not doing anyone any favors.
So what do you think the solution is? I mean, I kind of... I don't see us going to a choice system in education. I don't see the teachers' unions letting go of their hold of school boards and elections. I don't see Democrats bringing teachers' unions to task or any other unions to task. What is the silver lining for us here?
Well, I'm a management consultant also, and I'm an expert in organizations and organizational change. That's what I spent a lot of my life dealing with. And nonprofit organizations like government, well, all organizations act as though they're living beings. Once they come into being, they try to continue their existence, they try to grow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a for-profit business, you're limited by, you've got to talk people into voluntarily parting with their money for your goods and services. So, you know, that shapes you, that restricts you, whereas government doesn't have those restrictions. So, I mean, I think that really, sadly, Chuck, I think it comes down to one of two things. Either we do have a great awakening and people finally say, okay, individual freedom is the way to go. You know, we need to start thinking about systems that generate the most good for the most people. Or government will continue to expand until the system collapses. And that will be a very, very unpleasant experience, which millions and millions of people will die.
Well, I got to study a lot of Chinese history, and it's just repetitive. You know, long are the states disunited, in which case it's anarchy, the warlords, everybody's killing each other in small ones. And then they bring them all together and some kind of unity. But that unity soon brings on a huge bureaucratic state. It doesn't start out with a huge bureaucratic state.
Right.
But it's slowly, and it slowly metastasizes, and it chokes and kills. And finally, everything breaks apart as the huge bureaucracy just slaughters its own people. And I'm afraid I kind of went, well, I guess that's how history works. I guess until, you know, the teachers' unions and everybody else finally choke this country to death, then we'll have another revolution, and maybe we can go back to the good old days of the 1800s and 1900s. I mean, I just don't see how you break through the enormous forces of lethargy and stagnation that are out there compared to the forces that want to change things. I mean, it is amazing that big media decides, oh yeah, we love this bureaucratic state. We love the whole country going down the drain. I mean, it's just amazing how many, I mean, there's almost no institution left that the Democratic Party has not taken and destroyed. And I guess it was destroyed.
Well, I think the wealthy are mistaken if they think their wealth is going to protect them if things really go bad. It will not. And if we keep just printing money like we are, what we're discussing might not be like 50 years, 100 years down the road. I mean, if the U.S. dollar ever stops being the world reserve currency, this country is not going to like where we end up. And there will be violent revolution.
Well, we'll get Germany of 1919 or something. 1920. I mean, it's inevitable, sort of. I mean, we've gone, it used to be at a time when Republicans pretended they cared about it, but now nobody cares, right? Now, another $2 trillion. Yeah, Joe, let's do another $2 trillion. No, $1.8 trillion. And then we'll do a $6 billion budget, $6 trillion. I mean, All fiscal strength has gone in. It'll keep on going day after day, decade after decade. And one day it'll all collapse. One day, I think you're right. And it may be next week. It may be 20 years from now. But one day, it's inevitable. It can't. You just can't keep on printing endless money and having it all.
So there's a profound difference between wealth and money.
Yes.
And many U.S. citizens don't understand that, and then they think that just printing money is creating wealth, and that's not remotely the case. And when we design poorly designed systems that require an ever growing base at the bottom, right? All of our social
Ponzi
security
systems—they're
Ponzi schemes. I mean, one would hope. You know, we elect intelligent people, supposedly. They can see that that's a Ponzi scheme.
Or senile old man, one of the two.
Intelligent people
or senile old dumb man, one of the two. Well, John, I love talking to you. I could talk to you for another 5 hours. We got to have you back on, but I appreciate you coming on. John Conlon, where can people get your works?
They can go to my website, eicenterprises.org. Or just search for my name. I'm pretty easily found out there.
That's great. You're fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. You take care.
Take care. All right. I see the Yellow Rose of Texas has joined us. Karen Kathleen. How are you doing, Karen? You got to turn on your audio. Not yet.
I am fine, Chuck.
There you are. Good to see you.
Thank you. A yellow rose. Okay, I'll take it. That's fine.
Well, it's a compliment. Yellow Rose of Texas is a compliment, but you can't go too far back in the history if you want to get insulted.
Well, if I want to know history, I'll ask you.
I
saw Julie there.
That's right.
Yes.
We have school. There's no aftercare on this last couple of days of school. So that's what I need to pick up. And we have an addition for a week. Mr. Ortado is coming home with us for a week. Mr. Ortado.
Why don't you bring Mr. Ortado down so we can see him?
No, that's right. He's either a gerbil or a hamster. Not clear which.
Well, I thought you were going to say Mr. Ortado head, and that would be racist. That would be not allowed.
So. That's right, not allowed. So anyway, but back in time to talk to you.
Oh, I'm so glad you made it. You know, and the dogs are coming into the studio, and it's like
it's a menagerie, a zoo here.
Yeah. Can you see my neon sign? I love my neon sign. I think it's so glaring. You can't see it. It says,
I can't see what it says. What does it say?
It says on air.
There you go.
Is that cool?
That's very cool.
I love it.
All right. Well, you know, we had you on because you, I have to admit, rightfully so, sort of called me out a little bit. I was talking about all the Biden crises, right? And I said, and they were firing at each other in the Middle East. And you pointed out, well, it's kind of like saying if Russia was nuking Arizona and Arizona fired back in self-defense, that they were firing on each other. It's like not exactly the case. So why don't you explain? And I thought to myself, you know, she's absolutely right. And so first, you're right. I can see that and I will watch my words because I think words matter in this day and age.
On the other hand, you don't want to watch your words too much because I say that's the reason I came up with a show called Spouting Off.
Right.
Because it means you're expressing yourself uncensored. Yeah, you could be diplomatic sometimes, but in today's cupcake snowflake society, only for one side, not for the other.
Right.
It's best that you say what's on your mind and let people deal with it. So
right.
I dealt with it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You got over it.
I don't always comment. I didn't used to comment a lot on the Middle East and so forth because I really am not, I don't feel knowledgeable enough about the inside scoop on Israeli politics. I can barely keep track of American politics. But that being said, this last blow up, and I don't mean that as a pun, but it is, was so familiar and so the same as every other blow up. And they keep using the same tactics over and over and over again. And then, you know, it's a propaganda game.
Yes.
That they use a petty excuse, which means absolutely nothing, and they're saving it in their back pocket. I'm talking about the left, the radicals, the terrorists. They always use the same excuse. And then they use it as an excuse that they have to bomb Israel for the umpteenth time, rocket Israel. Israel has enormously superior firepower, defensive and offensive, and they use it to turn America and the entire world against Israel. Oh, because there are so many casualties on the Arab side. Well, it is an unknown secret. It is a poorly kept secret that these terrorists plant bombs under hospitals and schools and in civilian areas because they use their own people as cannon fodder.
Right. And or sometimes the Associated Press as well. I mean, you know,
about that story.
Yeah, you know,
for listeners who don't know, the AP was horrified, absolutely horrified, that Israel bombed a building with an AP office in it and claimed they didn't know that Hamas was in the same building.
Even though
I know that Hamas Incorporated had an office, but then who knew?
They probably weren't on like the office directory, but I was reading something else where Associated Press reporters previously had complained about them firing missiles from next door. So it's like, what do you think they were doing? And it's just, it's ridiculous. And I think
the only thing I have a problem is they warned the AP reporters.
they should.
They always do that. And what do they get for their trouble? They are more careful because they think they're going to get brownie points by the world media, and they're never going to get a darn thing from the world media because that's not part of the agenda.
Well, I remember last time I gave my opinion on the Arab Israeli.
Oh, you got yelled at.
Yeah, I got yelled at.
By KNUS.
At KNUS. Yeah, we had a lot of people.
You got yelled at a lot. People may not be aware of
that. Yeah, but he spouts off in a good way. So.
Right.
Yeah. But I kind of said, look, you have to realize that people fight over land. They fought over land. Other than the boss, maybe. Everybody has replaced somebody else. And when two people are fighting over the same plot of land, you know, you get your choice. You get to be oppressed, or you get to be the oppressor. If Israeli stops being the oppressor, the Palestinians will slaughter every one of them.
That may be true, but I'm glad that I'm armed with something to bring to your attention.
What's that?
Okay. Now let me see if I can find it because I just. Posted.
Are you reading? I was reading something else that said it's actually not about land, it's about religion. It's about religion, not land.
But here's the thing. And that's Dennis Prager's piece that I was going to refer Chuck to. It has always been about not allowing Jews in the Middle East, even though Jews have been there for 5,000 years.
Somebody was there 6,000 years ago. And somebody else 7,000 years ago, and somebody else 9,000 years ago.
Yeah, but the point is, the same people who are claiming that Israel is an apartheid state, which is nonsense and preposterous and ridiculous, are the ones that kicked out every Jew in their country.
Of course they did, and they'll kill every Jew if they get a chance. And Israel, in the next war, will drive the Palestinians from the West Bank. And that will happen, and people go, oh, no, that's good. Guarantee it. Guarantee it will drive every Arab from the West Bank. And that's what the world is. It's like people go, well, Americans, Europeans were cruel to the Indians. You kind of go, well, the Indians were cruel to the Indians before that.
Look, can we just zero in on this question of whether the perpetual wars in the Middle East between Israel and its neighbors was really about land? I want to try to maybe pin you down a little bit and ask you
if you think
it's really about land when the truth is it's not, because
it is.
The Arab countries will not tolerate a Jewish state anywhere in that region. Period.
End of sentence.
That's land. Yes.
But I would
appreciate
land.
It's not a Pacific land. It's about having a home for the Jewish people. And the Jewish people want to have a home, and the Arabs don't want them to have a home. And they'll kill every Jew to try to get them out. And Israeli doesn't stop Iran, doesn't stop Syria, doesn't stop its other enemies. It will be obliterated. It will be obliterated.
But here's my thing, though. Let me ask about this, because I think you're actually both kind of saying the same thing, really. But
That's our Julie.
You should have been a negotiator United Nations, except they're terrible.
Well, yeah, I'll be in the World Health Organization. Yeah, and I'll say, it did come from the lab. Correct me if I'm wrong, but under Donald Trump, weren't we having peace talks? Having peace agreements? So yes. Joe Biden comes in, and I think more than anything, this is about Joe Biden's weakness again. That's, I think, a lot to do with it. So Joe Biden is in office not even 100 days, and Hamas starts bombing Israel with Iran behind them. Meanwhile, we're trying to work out this deal with Iran.
And we sent them $253 billion.
I agree with you, but it's not weakness. It's not Biden's weakness. The piece that I wrote that I sent you, because Biden's break with the left on Israel is another put up job.
Yeah.
Biden is merely the puppet.
He's
not weak, and the left isn't weak. That's being nice to call them weak. They love war in the Middle East, just like they love war.
And why is it? Because here's my question. Why is it because we've all played this song before, right? And we've had these debates before. And here we are again. Donald Trump is actually, it seemed to be making progress. Biden comes in and it's exactly like you said, no, we don't want progress. Why is it that, you know, that Rick Santorum gets fired from CNN for saying something weird about Native Americans?
Well, I mean, absolutely correct, that everybody would agree with.
Right. But then in the meantime, you can have some of these congressional leaders, the squad. Saying flat out racist stuff about Jewish people. And somehow that's okay. I mean,
Yes. Because the real ugly, horrible truth is that the media, or rather the Democrat Party, which is controlled now by the socialist communist left and its minions in the media, which is almost all of them, has not only turned anti-Israel and anti-Jewish, they're trying to foment even more anti-Israelism and anti-Jewishism, if you will. And that's part and parcel of the socialist Marxist agenda. Every time this happens, every time a leftist gets in power, they do the same thing over and over and over again. And in my piece, I mentioned about resetting what, right. You know, I have maintained all along that the left never hated Donald Trump like people think. They said they reduced it all to they hated him. Well, guess what? It wasn't personal, Sonny. It was strictly business. It was that Donald Trump represented all the things they do not stand for. It was purely ideological. And Donald Trump made it possible for the average American citizen to think that peace could be possible in the Middle East. And it is. He showed us it is. And what did they want to do? They wanted to reset back to a time in which everybody expects that war in the Middle East is inevitable.
They just want this. I think too.
Well,
we have
our former Secretary of State Kerry pronouncing for you, whatever it was. He says, "I just want to emphasize to you, there will never be peace with the other states without peace with Palestinian." And Trump said, "Well, yeah, well, let's give it a shot." And of course, he does it. And then they go, "Okay, well, let's start that Palestinian war up again."
Yeah, well, and then John Kerry commits what I would call treason, or whatever the term is for it, and informs Iran about what's going on. These people have the so-called superpowers, which America is quickly losing. Have always used the Middle East as their proxy in their wars between one another. And that's one of the reasons. If you can use little countries, that doesn't mean that the Arabs and the Jews aren't, you know, there isn't a conflict. What it means is that there's been a vested interest among a whole bunch of people to keep these wars going. What did Trump do? He bypassed all of them.
Right.
And he went straight for protecting these countries that are getting hammered by the bigger
countries. But Trump showed us over and over again, and this is why they really hate him, is that if you actually are not just spouting off words, right, and if you're not trying to manipulate and fool people, if you're actually trying to get a deal done, then you look for ways and you get deals done. And they don't want deals done. I think these people are globalists. I mean, I think it goes beyond socialists and Marxists. They are just globalists, right? And they,
well,
and
Marxism
I think,
is globalist.
Well, they want a one world government and a globalist government, but the kind of government, if it is a government they want, is with them in control, which
it's an oligarchy on steroids.
And communism.
Right.
And they're all going to destroy each other in the end, but we're going to get hammered first.
And I think that's
got to stop it.
They want chaos in the Middle East. They want chaos at the border. They want people on gas lines. They want all of that, because that then I think they feel that makes people say, oh, well, things are unsettled.
Thank God we've got Joe Biden.
That's right, Joe Biden, who Jen Psaki can barely keep up with him.
Oh, himself. Very hard to keep up with him.
Very hard to keep up with Joe.
It's stunning.
It's tripping.
I think it is, the trouble is you look at, you know, my daughter and I were talking today, some of these deals that are going on, they don't get a lot of attention because they're complicated, but you've got AT&T, Time Warner, Discovery Channel, Amazon today bought MGM, and they're going to remix some of these old classics. I mean, you're seeing is that you've got Ken Buck fighting Marco Rubio because they're all being paid. They're all being bribed, I guess I would call it. You've got these giant corporations maneuvering to take over everything. And I used to think, I mean, the politicians, and I think the Ocasio-Cortezes, all of those people, and I'm sorry, Ken Buck anymore too, are just as guilty, and they're all being controlled. They're all just puppets anymore, Karen. And I think that's, to a certain extent, what's happening in the Middle East. Now, did Hamas see this as an opportunity? Did somebody say, hey, this might be a good time to bomb Israel again?
Yeah, they did, because they're popular.
Well, and they didn't do it without the approval of their friends in America. You've got to believe it. They didn't do it without the approval of all the people pulling the strings. Do you think that the so-called Arab Spring in the Obama years was not orchestrated? It's all orchestrated anymore.
Well, you guys need to, what I think you need to do, Karen, is go trash some liquor stores and loot some stuff. And then
the liquor stores, huh?
Oh, well, don't loot them then. No, I mean,
what? We own the liquor stores?
Yeah, you own the liquor store. You can't trash your own liquor stores. Trash out Korean markets. Go crash some Korean markets.
Is this one of those stereotypes that Jews own liquor stores?
They do own them. They own our neighborhood. They own them.
A little known.
Okay.
No, German corporations own them. They're controlling the liquor.
Well, they control corporations around the big liquor stores.
I'm saying, but you need to do, Karen, if you guys want to get someone to pay attention, then you need to organize. You need to, like, set up an autonomous zone. That would be a good idea.
The left only considers Jews a minority when they can point to anti-Semitism against George Soros, who is the biggest self-hating Jew anti-Semite of the bunch.
Right.
And by the way, as a point of light humor, do you know how a caterer makes money at weddings? You know?
How?
Well, if it's a non-Jewish wedding, they charge for the booze and they have free food. And if it's a Jewish wedding, they have free booze and charge for the food.
There you go. Oh, racist.
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 That's a typical anti-Semitic trope.
There you go. So much of what you said is kind of funny. My daughter and I had a pedicure early today, and we were the only people not wearing a mask, but nobody said a word to us, right? And I know for a while I was afraid, and I know you were too, we were going to be wearing masks forever. What do you make of this sudden, COVID's not a thing. Oh, and by the way, actually it might have escaped from a lab after all. Who knew?
Who knew?
What do you make of all of this flip-flopping? Well,
you know, they decide where they're going, and then they make the facts fit the narrative they want to make.
Yeah.
So I've said it 100 different ways, and I'll say it again. The masks of well over a year ago was the watershed moment that turned politicians from supposed public servants into dictators. Yeah. And it has been a psyop all along. Right. It's all about obedience. And whenever they do an about face, whenever they change, they are so shameless. They don't hold themselves to the same standards we do about right. being intellectually consistent. I mean, my God, they have turned on everything that they ever claimed to believe in, including book burning.
Right.
Including
the party's completely
250-pound male wrestlers going into the ring with a 120-pound woman and pummeling her.
Right. This,
they don't care. They're absolutely shameless. So whenever they do something like that, it's always to prepare for the next crazy-ass narrative that they're preparing for. Remember when they got all over bullying and you wondered why? Why do they keep talking about bullying, bullying, bullying? You know why? To inoculate themselves when they were getting ready to bully us. Right. And that's how you know that they are on to the next strategy. That everything they do is orchestrated and staged, which, if I may say, is why I wrote the piece I wrote about Biden breaking with the left on Israel. Nothing could be further from the truth. Biden's not breaking with anybody.
Right. Right.
They want people to think Biden has a mind of his own. And I wrote another piece called The Presidential Potted Plant. If you call a vegetable having a mind of their own, then maybe. But he's a potted plant. He's a plant for the left, and that's all he is.
And I think you are onto something there, too, because all of a sudden, I mean, I think on the one hand, they're ready to move on. And I think maybe perhaps a lot of uncomfortable truths were beginning to emerge about COVID. But I think they have something else planned.
Oh, they always do.
And I think they always do. And I think the only thing they did wrong this time is they didn't get the lawfare memo out to the media yet. So the media is still kind of jumping up and down saying, wait a minute, wait, you won our panic porn. Did you see CNN's ratings down 70% since January? Yeah. MSNBC's down almost 50%.
That's why they keep resurrecting Trump. You know, they've got to keep Trump on the front burner because it's the only thing that saves their ratings.
And I kind of wonder what their thing is next, because that does scare me. Yeah. How complicit people were and are. Like I said, I've told the story about running into a guy and I was going to the store without a mask and he said, well, I'm going to wait and see if you get yelled at. And I'm like, you're an adult man.
That was a great line you said.
You know, you're like, you're an adult.
In other words, use Joan Rivers. Oh, grow up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, listen, we only have 2 minutes left. So let me ask you, where can people find you and hear you? Because you're all over the place.
Everywhere.
I know you
say that. All over the place. You appear everywhere.
I'm really not. But I am in Texas, and I love that. You can find everything I'm up to at KarenCataline.com. Yes, I'm a middle-aged white woman who complains a lot. But I don't know why your name has to be Karen. And my last name is Cataline, K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. I do a show out of New Hampshire Tuesdays and Thursdays and BBS Radio on Fridays. And I do a lot of fill-in. I had somebody ask me, so when are you going to get your own show? I said, I have my own show.
What do you mean?
He said, you do?
Yeah, more than one. All right.
Well, great, Karen. Good to see you. Good to talk to you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Hey, we will have on Friday Rhonda Kennedy. We had her on during the election season. She was running for something. She wants to talk about Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot only doing interviews with minority reporters and how somehow or another that's not bad, but if
that's good.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And it'll be Party Friday. Get Patrick Neville on too. Thank you to Chuck for holding the fort. Well, I picked up Rev.
Held everything down. It started to go down. Not because of Karen. She was great, but you know.
I'm hoping that Mr. Ortado, I told you.
Now I got to go upstairs and confront Mr. Ortado.
And I hope he's still in his cage.
Our new house guest.
That's right, from the fourth grade class at the Academy. Everybody have a great afternoon.
Take care.
Thank you to the folks at BBS. We'll see you Friday.